Noach, Tavshin, Samach Tes. Our job today is to expand our understanding, our perspective on a fundamental Jewish concept, and that is our relationship to nature and miracles. We will be scanning through key psukim in Sefer, in Parshas Bereishis and Noach, and this will help us understand the role of the Jewish people, psukim in the story of the Kriyas Yamsuf, a pasuk in Yehoshua, a fundamental idea of our relationship to nature and the relationship between nature and miracles. Now, this class is a tribute to my father-in-law, Rav Zalman Wien, who was a student of the Akedah Yitzchak, the Baal Akedah, not in literal terms, since the Baal Akedah lived about 1,000 years ago, but not quite. But he made a study of the Sefer Akedah Yitzchak, which is a most dense and complicated Sefer. Almost no one learns the Akedah Yitzchak. It is filled with fundamental, profound ideas, but it is very difficult to get through, and he, being a brilliant man, decided, after being inspired by hearing someone speak develop ideas that he had never heard before, which were so creative and original, and realizing these ideas came from the Akedah Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Arama, a Rishon, he decided to make a study and spent 25 years studying the Akedah Yitzchak. And when I entered the family, little did I know that in the package deal came my father-in-law, who was a brilliant philosopher, thinker, and he taught me so much. And this is one of the ideas that he spent a lot of time developing with me, teaching me, going through the sources, going through the Akedah, the Baal Akedah. And here I pass it on to you. If you would ask a educated Jew to explain to you what is the relationship of the Jewish people and the way we think and the way we behave to the concept of nature, the powers of nature. Are we afraid of nature? Do we fear nature? Do we think nature rules us? Are we fatalists? Whatever will be, we can't fight the nature, the powers of nature. Or do we feel that we are the masters of nature and we can study nature, do what we want with nature, and use it to our benefit and in our own self-interest? And of course, everybody would answer the second. Being afraid of nature, having a deference to nature and the powers of nature, is paganism. That's what led to nature worship and all of its horrors. And the backwardness, it's what kept the world primitive and undeveloped for thousands of years. And any country, by the way, that insists on believing in paganism and the forces of nature does not advance. They're primitive, they offer nothing, they offer no medicines, no cures, no advancements, zero. Because why bother going to a doctor when it's just the curse of the nature god that's causing you your pain or your suffering? And who are you to interfere with them anyway? So any advancement came from those that broke through and became the masters of nature. So we would say we dominate nature. But is that the optimum? Is the optimum to fight with nature and dominate it? Well, we have to go back to the beginning and see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu set this world up and what was the original relationship of man and nature. And in that quest to understand that, we come to deal with the issue of miracles. What are miracles? And the basic question, are miracles a good thing for people or a bad thing for people? Just to set this little thought experiment up, which most people would say, sure, miracles are wonderful because they prove that there's a God who created nature. If God can interfere with nature and split the sea, and makes the snow fall in the summertime and make a man nurse a child, so with things that never happen, so that proves there's God. In fact, many people say, God, you know, non-religious people, if you want me to believe in you, do me a miracle. You know, pick up this book over here, fly it around the room a few times and put it back down and I'll believe in you. Do a miracle for me if you're there, right? So most people would answer that miracles are wonderful and they are the fundamentals. They serve as a fundamental basis for our belief system, the splitting of the sea, the Mon, Har Sinai. We're constantly talking about the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we must we must respect and value miracles, and the more the merrier. But is that really the case? Well, let's think about this. Nature itself. Is nature meant to be a testimony to God's existence, mastery, and control of the world? Yes. Hashamayim misaprim kavod kel. The heavens speak of your glory. Hashem set up the system of nature carefully. We read about it in Bereishis. It took 6 days, all of the natural systems and forces. And if a person studies these forces and their complexity and their perfection, a person could come to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu through nature. In fact, one of the main arguments put forth by so many philosophers throughout history is the argument for a design in the world. There must be a God who created this world with a purpose. It's too complicated. It's too vast. Every system is so intermingled with another system. The way the electrons and the neutrons function in one atom, the same way the galaxies function, same way they move in the small scale and in the large scale. Nature speaks of God's handiwork. That's a basic concept. So what if nature, every now and then, does something different? Is that good or bad? So here's an example. Somebody buys a watch. It costs them $50,000. It's the best watch on earth. And it's going to keep time for their great-great-great-grandchildren. And they don't own that watch. They're just preserving it for the next generation. And it's going to keep time forever. So the watchmaker sets the watch at 12 noon and says, here, congratulations and enjoy. 1 hour passes, and the watch says 1:10. So the owner runs back to the watchmaker and says, something's wrong. It says 1:10, and I know my cheap watch here says it's 1 o'clock, and all the clocks say it's 1 o'clock. Something's wrong with the watch. So the watchmaker says, no, nothing's wrong with the watch. This is a miracle, because this watch is perfect. This is a miracle. So, however, he fixes the watch, gives it back to the owner, and an hour passes, and now instead of saying 2 o'clock, it says 1:49. And he runs back to the watchmaker, and he says, it's not 1:49. And the watchmaker says, it's a miracle, another miracle. Okay, how many miracles do you need before you throw the watch away? Or sell it on eBay? how many miracles do you need? Bottom line is, if something is supposed to work to perfection and it doesn't, and there's constantly some type of alternative, does that speak of the perfection of the watch or the imperfection of the watch? How many miracles do you need before you say, there is no design in nature? It's random. One day it does this and one day it does that. One day water flows down, one day water flows up. You know, how many miracles do you need? Mostly women give, nurse children, but here a man nurses a child, and then mostly oil burns, but now vinegar is burning. All the little miracles in the Gemara, the miracles in our history, usually oil burns at a certain rate, but it burned for 8 days, so it doesn't always burn at a certain rate. How many miracles do you need before you say, maybe there are no rules, maybe there is no mastermind who set up a clear and perfect system. Maybe it's random. Maybe there's a lot of forces working against each other, and what you're seeing is one time this force dominates and one time that force dominates. That's why sometimes any of the miracles we just mentioned, or even the miracles in Mitzrayim, sometimes the wind blows in the locusts, that's a random, the god of the insects, whatever, is dominant and force the wind to carry the insects, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there's darkness, sometimes the sun is blocked out, sometimes it isn't. It's whichever god is more powerful at the moment. So maybe the more miracles that we experience, the worse it is. More miracles, the worse it is. Every day, a few miracles, that means there's no rules, there's no coherence. So therefore, maybe we're not so fond of miracles. At the same time, our religion is based on miracles. We need a working concept to deal with this. Does Judaism believe in asking for miracles? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You don't ask for a miracle. Ein somchen al hanes. You don't expect a miracle. You don't want God to interfere in nature for you. When Yahushua was fighting the war, and he said, Shemesh begivon dom. He needed a little more time. And he said, let the sun stand still in Givon. Was that a good thing or a bad thing that the sun would stand still? In other words, we know today the sun doesn't move. The earth rotates around the sun. So he's asking the earth to stop its rotation, is really what he's saying? Let the earth stop its rotation. Is that good or bad? That proves there's God. So if you look, so the pasuk there tells us that when Yeshua said, Az Yedaber, Yeshua Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis, Az Yedaber Yeshua LaHashem, Bayom Teit HaShem Es HaMori Lefnei Bnei Yisrael, Vayomer Le'enei Yisrael, Shemesh Begivon Dom, Vayareach Be'emek Ayalon. Everything stop. So Rashi says, stop Dom Milashon Domia, be silent. Silent from what? So Rashi explains that all the time that the earth is rotating, as we know now, that nature is going on according to its pre-designed rules, that is a shira to God. That testifies to God's creation and involvement and mastery of the world, and God as the supreme mastermind, controller of all things. So when Yeshua said, nature come to a halt, that will stop people. That will mean that nature, the shira, will be silenced. The song, the testimony to God's perfection will be silenced, and people will then not be able to say, oh, look how perfect God runs this world. Maybe there's another power and interfered with the rotation of the earth or the sun, you know, stronger than the sun god. So Yeshua said, you be quiet and you stop. And the Shemesh resisted. Dom lo milomar shira. Stop saying shira. Shemesh begivon dom. Be quiet. No more shira. You can't testify to God's existence. You have to stop. V'chol zman shu domim, as long as the sun is silent, so to speak, which means omed ve'eno holech, it stops and it doesn't continue moving, then it is not able to sing shira. It is not able to testify to God. So why would Yeshua take this risk of people seeing this and thinking there must not be a God or there's a power stronger than the sun god? Because Yeshua said the miracle that will take place will allow us to be victorious, and we know that comes from Hashem, despite the fact that everyone else might be making a mistake, and we will sing Shira, and our Shira will replace the sun's Shira. That's really said. Amar Shira tachas Hashemesh. Yeshua said Shira instead of the sun. But the Rashi is recognizing here, asking the sun to stop is taking a huge risk, or the world to stop rotating, or nature to come to a halt in any way, is a huge risk. It brings the wrong conclusions to everybody's minds. So, you might realize that the way that nature worship developed, paganism developed in the world, and it is alive and well in vast parts of the primitive world. For example, about 15 years ago, there was an article in Life magazine about a province in China that was downstream, like on some river, and the river dried up, and there was no fish, and they were all starving to death. And nobody did anything about it because the river god is obviously angry, until some American scientist somehow was brought in, and he went upstream about 15 miles, and guess what? There was a dam. And guess what? Here's the dam, here's the water level, and here's the intake valve, a foot or so above the water level. All it needed was a 15-cent pipe, a little piece of PVC to bring the water, pump it up a little bit, and the water will start flowing. And nobody did anything. That's fatalism. My friend Susan Lust, who used to live here, was before she was religious, was a studied dance, and she went with her instructor to an African village somewhere to study African dance. And she told me this story. At one point, they came out of their huts. They were there for a few weeks, and there's a boy drowning in the river. And a big African man standing on the banks of the river doing absolutely nothing. And the Americans, not used to this, said, save him. And the African man said, this is a gift to the river gods. If the river god needs a sacrifice, he will give us fish. We can't interfere. So the Americans went in and saved this child. Okay, but that's what it is. Now, just on this point, paganism, nature worship, is vicious and brutal. It's not just a sin against God. It is a sin against humanity. We took our kids to see a documentary about a year ago called Blindsighted. Blindsight. Scary. It was about a woman from England who herself was blind, and a man from America was blind. And their act of goodness in this world, they really were exceptional people, was to travel to Tibet and to work with some of the numerous blind children who are just crawling all over Tibet. There's just an enormous amount of blindness in Tibet among the children, among the adults. something obviously in the water and the pollution. There's an enormous, all the provinces around this particular area, they're just plagued with blindness. So there's, and they worked with these children, they basically got them, a whole bunch of them, to climb Everest. That was their goal. And it was an amazing movie. But the footage of the way these children were treated in Tibet on the streets, people burned them. First of all, they were thrown out of their homes once they were blind because they're too much effort and they're a disgrace and they're obviously cursed by the snake god. That's why they're blind. And who wants them? They obviously did some terrible thing in their previous life and this is their punishment. So these children are thrown out onto the streets. They are abused. There was footage of some old lady screaming at one of these blind children, "You're not even good enough to eat your father's carcass." They are starving. They are sold as slaves. No, there's no such thing as taking them to a doctor because the snake god has cursed them. The children themselves say, "I must have done a terrible thing in my previous life because I'm cursed here." There is no doctors. There is no medicine. Zero. They go to the temple. They get some smoke in their face and some this and that. That's the extent of it. There is no way. No one's interested in helping them because it's not a medical thing. It's about the gods. Nature worship is not just a sin against God. It's not just a sin against God. It is a sin against humanity. It is the worst form of brutality and cruelty because there is no compassion at all. So how did the people become nature worshippers? How did Adam's descendants become nature worshippers? Well, it's exactly what we spoke about. They looked at the randomness of nature, and they didn't say there's a God. They said there isn't a God. Because one day there's a hurricane, and one day there's an earthquake, and one day the sun does shine, and one day it doesn't shine, and one day our crops are flooded, some years they grow. It's random. So they started worshiping nature and trying to appease nature through the most extreme forms they could, to the extent of killing their own children and burning and mutilating themselves and all of that and other things. That's how they got to that. Now, why did Hashem set up a world so chaotic and incoherent that it led people to these conclusions? That's our question. And coming to the conclusions that there is no God because nature is random leads to all this cruelty and all this suffering. The first 2,000 years before Avraham are called the years of darkness, tohu vavohu. It was not a good time to live. Avraham was the first person to come and say, there are no 1,000 different nature gods. There's one God who controls all of nature. And if you serve that one God, he will put nature back, you know, he will help, nature will be at your service and everything will be okay and you won't have to be afraid of nature. How did this all happen? So going back to Bereshis, the original relationship between man and nature was not adversarial like it was in the paganistic societies in the thousands of years before Avraham. That's not how Hashem set up the world. Random nature, chaotic nature, and poor victim, man, the victim, trying to defend himself against these random forces and doing whatever he could, and logic led him to serve these forces. That's not how Hashem set up the world. If you go back to Bereshis, we start our scan. We're going to be going through a lot of fascinating psukim. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Ches and Chaf Tes. The original arrangement was, clearly, Vayivarech Osam Elokim, page 8, God bless man and woman, told them, fill up this world and dominate it. Kivshuha, dominate this world and rule over everything, the fish and the birds and everything. And eat everything and use everything. You are the master. The first expression of man's relationship to nature is, you are the master of nature. You control it. Now, does nature want to be mastered by man? Absolutely. Its name is Adama, the land. Man is always created from the Adama. What is Adama? We know that Adam and Adama are similar. Adama has a hay. Well, what is Mitzrayma? Artsa. To Mitzrayim, to the land. So Adama, to Adam, in the service of Adam. The whole of nature was created to happily exist in the service of Adam. Leha Adam, for on behalf of the man. Now, what was man's job? Man's job was to nurture nature. In other words, to give nature an opportunity to express itself, to sing its shira. How would man do this? There was a very simple relationship, Brother Balakay explained, set up between man and nature. If man would live as he was expected to live, as Hashem intended him to live, and the six mitzvos The seven mitzvot of Noach didn't start with Noach. Six were original with Adam. Basically, to know there is one Hashem, and then we say Birchas Hashem, which means the opposite. Blessing Hashem, which means the opposite. No killing, no stealing, no adultery, and setting up a fair court system. Okay, knowing there's one God means no images, no paganism. Revering that God, the basic morality and ethics, and justice for all people. That was straight from Adam. If man would live like that, then man would, that man's living as an expression of God's will would keep the world in harmony, and nature would happily serve him, and nature would be his faithful, trustworthy handmaiden, so to speak, coming to his, serving him at his beck and call. Everything man needed would be right there. Needed something to eat, it was right there. Needed anything that, and nature would never be a force to inflict harm upon man, or fear, or danger. No such concept. Now, man would be the uncontested ruler, and his service, and as if you look in Perek Beis, Pasuk Tes Vav, La'avda u'lashamra, he's put in this world to work it and to protect it. Page 12. Put him in Gan Eden, La'avda u'lashamra, to work it and to protect it. And Hirsch explains that the service man provides for the world, because he didn't have to work it in Gan Eden. Remember, everything was there? But it was before the time we had a plow and etc. And for work the earth, all he had to do was pray. The rain would fall and everything was at his fingertips. So what service? What does la'avda mean, serve the earth? So Hirsch says that man's service of the earth is allowing it to reach its true purpose. In other words, giving it its ability to reach its potential, which is to serve man in perfection. That is the way man serves the earth, by allowing the earth to reach its potential. That means by man's perfection, it serves the purpose of the earth. Now, we move on to Perek Gimel. And man sins. So what will happen when man sins? Well, in this system, Pasuk Yud Zayin, according to this system, man is the one who enables the earth to express itself correctly. So in this system, what is nature? What is nature's role? Nature is, as we said, at the service of man. And nature is definitely, unlike today, moral and a baal bechira. Nature can make certain choices. It's built into the system. It's kind of, it's instinctual, the way a spider spins a web. But it has a certain degree of choice, ability to choose. Now, what does that mean? Nature is moral. It chooses. Nature serves man when man deserves it. Nature will be forced to withhold its bounty from man if man doesn't deserve it. Nature will be the litmus test. Nature will be an expression of man's spiritual health. When man is in a good state, nature is his best friend. Everything works for him. Everything. The climate, health, the produce, children, the animals, everything. There's nothing to cause him pain, nothing to bother him. Like my children say, why did Hashem make mosquitoes? Why did Hashem make fleas? Nothing in nature is there to bother him. Nothing will bother him. And yet if man sins, nature will teach man a lesson immediately by withholding. Nature is moral. Today, nature is not moral. It is not immoral. It is simply amoral. In other words, if a tzaddik and a rasha fall off the top of the Empire State Building, they will fall at the same rate. Nature doesn't get involved. It's amoral. But there was a time where nature was moral. It was, nature to some degree was a baal bechira. That was the original relationship between man and nature. Now when man sins, look at the pasuk in Yud Zayin. La'adam amar, and he said to Adam, because you listened to your wife and you ate from the tree, look what the next words are. Arura ha'adama be'avurecha. The adama, the adam, that which is supposed to be at your service, that you are supposed to allow to express itself perfectly, is cursed. Now what does bavurecha mean? Bavur David avdecha, right? on behalf of David, your servant. What does Bavor mean? Because of you in a negative way? I'm cursing the land because of you? No. That would be Biglalecha, Biglalcha, right? How do you pronounce it? Biglalcha. But this is Ba'avurecha, which means for, Ba'avurecha means for your sake, in a positive sense. Ba'avur, which is positive, Ba'avurecha means for your sake. In other words, I am going to curse the earth for your benefit, which means now the earth will withhold. Kotz v'dardar, not only will it withhold when you work it, it won't give you what you want. Weeds and thorns and thistles won't be so easy. That's for your, on your behalf. So you'll realize that you're not up to par. As soon as the earth starts making things hard for you, you'll realize you have fallen and you need to improve, and the earth will get back to its normal state. So this is all a very good thing. The earth is linked to man, and it is therefore going to be forced to malfunction, which is against the will and nature and natural force of the earth. It's like taking a bird and not letting it fly, withholding its natural forces. And but that's what the earth is going to have to bear, that pain, against its will. It didn't do anything wrong, in order to teach you a lesson. Well, does the earth accept that silently? Imagine if we were forced, like they do in certain countries, women were forcibly given a hysterectomy so they couldn't have children. You do not allow a natural force to play its course. That's painful. So, but that's what happens to the earth. Arura ha'adama bavurecha, on account of, because on your behalf, the earth is going to be cursed to help you out. And that's curse number one. This is, and at least though man and nature are still linked, nature is moral, and it's going to show man what it needs, how man needs to improve. That's step number one. Next, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud. There's another sin here. That's the next sin of Cain and Hevel. Look what Hashem says. Meh asi. So what have you done? He tells Cain. Now look at the next words. Kol demei achicha tzoakim elai min ha'adama. The voice of your brother's blood is screaming to me. From where? From the adama. The earth is rejecting. The earth is resistant. The earth is saying, why do I have to bear the failure of man and open my mouth to take in, so to speak, the blood of his of the brother that he killed, and I have to suffer for it now? I'm saturated with the blood of Hevel. I didn't do anything wrong. And look at the next pasuk. Ata now aru ata min ha'adama. You are going to be cursed from this land that was forced to open its mouth and bear and take in, suffer the sin that you. That you've done. In other words, the land is rejecting the fact that it has to now malfunction even more to, in a sense, respond to this sin. If mankind sinks lower, the earth also has to function in, you know, has to punish man by not functioning on man's behalf. And the earth doesn't want to be forced, in a sense, to be silent and not sing Shira, not do what it was created to do. Not only now it doesn't have, it has to produce thorns and thistles, now it can't even produce a anchor, a place for man. Man has to wander. The earth can't even provide for man a place to be. Can't be man's home. Its name is Adama, and it can't serve man at all. Man has to no place to stay on this world. He's forced to wander. And the earth is forced into this predicament. And look at the next pasuk. Good days. Keep tavod es adama. You'll work the land, or the adama. V'lo tosif te kochalach, but it won't give its strength to you. It won't be allowed to. I'll withhold the earth's power. It's the forces of nature that normally would provide for you, and it won't be able to. It'll be restrained. Someone with legs who's not allowed to walk. But at least at this point, still, there's a link between man and nature doesn't like it. Man suffers too, but at least they're still linked. Now it's even harder to make peace with the natural forces. They can't provide for man, or they provide for man in a lesser degree. Next level. Perakei Pasuk Chavtes. So nature is in a very compromised state, And along comes someone who wants to restore the things to the way they were, wants nature to be at the service of man. He wants man. If nature won't be at the service of man, man will force nature into submission. If nature won't willingly be able to give its blessing to man, man will force nature. Who is that? Who was the first one to force nature into submission, to serve man? Perek Hei, Pasuk Chaf Tes. Yeah, there was a man named Noach. And why was he called Noach? Ze yinachameinu mimaseinu. This one is going to comfort us. From what? From all our hard work. Mitzavon yodeinu, that itzavon goes back to the curse. That Hashem had said to Adam, with itzavon you will eat from this land the rest of the days of your life through struggle. And now they said, we're struggling. Mi'itzavon yadeinu min ha'adama asher erera Hashem. This land that Hashem cursed that caused us so much trouble, this one's going to help us. How's Noah going to help him? He invented the plow. He was going to force nature into submission. That's not the way to restore things, though. Nature has to willingly give its blessing to man when man deserves it. Not evil man whose whole entire generation was destroyed forcing nature back into submission. It didn't work anyway. This generation that first began to subdue nature and undo the curse was destroyed completely because morally they were corrupt. So that's the first attempt, but that's not going to, it's always doomed to disaster, and we live in exactly the same predicament. If Noah began the process of subduing nature, where are we? We are way, way, way down the road with conquering nature, subduing nature, forcing nature to serve our needs. But are we therefore guaranteeing our survival and the ease of our survival? No, we're this close to utter destruction. Utter destruction. We're this close to nuclear holocaust. Because if man morally doesn't progress alongside his technical and scientific advancements, you can try to force nature into your will. It doesn't guarantee you any safety. All what that will guarantee is that with this power we have over nature, we could destroy ourselves. We're not getting back to Eden by putting nature at our service when we're morally corrupt, and nature will still win in the end, and the forces of nature that we unleash. We're in exactly the same predicament as Noah. And morally, we have to progress, and then nature will be given nature as our, as we said, our servant to take care of us, to provide all our needs. But we can't force it upon them if we don't deserve it morally. It won't work. So that's Noah. They're making an attempt. The system that they were living with was too impossible. They're trying to put nature back into its proper role. One way is to serve nature. The other way is science. Noah opted more for science, for advancement, for technology. Next. Pasuk Perek Vav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the world and says, that's it. This isn't going anywhere. And he decides to make the mabul. The pasuk we are going to focus on is Pasuk Hey on page 26. And Vayar Hashem ki raba ra'as ha'adam ba'aretz, how the wickedness of man was so great. V'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak ra kol hayom. Very important pasuk. We're going to compare it to another pasuk at the end of Noah. Not only was man so wicked, but kol yetzer machshavos libo, all the what yetzer means yotzer, to form, everything that his heart and his thoughts concocted and formed, or in other words, everything he contributed to this world, the product of his mind and his heart, was ra kol hayom, just ra. And that's why Hashem was going to destroy the world. Man's power, man's abilities were being all used for ra, for evil in God's eyes, and that was the reason for the destruction. Man, with all his capabilities, was only producing ra. So man, Hashem decides to destroy the mabul. Now turn to Perek Ches, to destroy the world through the mabul. Perek Ches, what happens? We have a few survivors in the Teva, and they come out. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, page 38. What's going to be when they exit the Teva and the world starts all over again? This is, now look what the earth, look what nature, look what the world had to undergo because of man's evil. Utter destruction. look what was brought upon the earth. Does the earth deserve this? Look at the suffering the earth, all of nature experienced, the return of the whole world to tohu vavohu, formlessness and shapelessness, as it was before the Bria, before creation. So now the whole thing is just going to start again? No, now there are all new rules. Here are the new rules. Noach offers a korban. Vayarach Hashem esreach anichoach v'yomer Hashem elibon. Hashem says, look at the next words. It's a different setup now, different arrangement. Lo osif lekalel od et adama bavor ha'adam. I am no longer going to curse the world, the earth, on man's behalf, for the benefit of man. Man has done so, has brought so much evil upon the earth, so much suffering upon the land, upon nature, has so forced nature to malfunction, not to sing Shira, not to do what I wanted it to do, that I have a whole new arrangement, and it's good and bad. That is, that I will never curse the world again or the earth again, you know, for the benefit of man. So what's the alternative? Well, here it's spelled out right here. And what's the reason for this, by the way? We're going to come back to this, because ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu urav. Now it's the cause for preserving the world, not for destroying the world. I'm no longer going to curse the earth on behalf of man, because what man's heart creates and forms is evil from his youth, and that's why I'm never going to destroy the world again. And I'm not going to curse the world on behalf of man anymore. So we'll go back to this. Now it's the reason for salvation. But what will Hashem do instead of cursing the earth for man's benefit? That's it. Od kol yemei ha'aretz, for the rest of history, all the days of the earth, the time of planting and harvest, the cold and the hot, summer, winter, day, night, it will not cease. In other words, the world is being spun off from its relationship to man. It's being completely delinked from man. It is going to go according to its natural cycles. It's going to have seasons, summer and winter, night and day, cold and hot. It's going to do its own thing. It's going to become amoral. It is going to become delinked from man completely. And you know what? Man better save up a lot of food in the summer, because nature's not going to give him food in the winter, whether he's, you know, no matter what. Nature is not going to take an interest in man. That's all. Nature is going to do its own thing, independent, amoral, not involved, and not being cursed every time man sins, because it's going to lead to another marble. It's going to be independent. Now, that is not the way things were meant to be, and that's what led to the, and that's what led the world right back after the marble into paganism, because here nature, delinked from man. There's no way to control the forces of nature. It doesn't care if you're righteous or good or bad or wicked. You know, two people living next to each other, one's righteous and one's evil, and they both get, their crops are both destroyed by the drought or the storms. Nobody cares about your moral behavior. Completely delinked. So now what you nature worship again. Try to please the gods. That was how Hashem left things after the marble. To man doing his thing, trying to survive in nature, who doesn't really spend any time worrying about what's happening to man. And is certainly not going to be punished for man. It's not linked to man. It's not taking responsibility for man. Totally separate. But that is not a harmonious system. That is not the way things were set up. That is man victim. Man is a victim. Man is vulnerable. Man is at the mercy of huge forces. Man can't control anything. Puts man in a terrible predicament of being a pawn, being weak, becoming a fatalist. It's totally the opposite of what Hashem wanted for this world. So then what happens? That's it. Goodbye and good luck. We live kind of in this world, don't we? We live in a world where we can't say, well, I'm righteous, so Hashem's going to do a miracle, you know, nature's going to serve me. I'm righteous, so my neighbor will get, you know, his crops will be destroyed in the frost, but mine won't, you know. No, nobody, we don't live in that world. We are all subject to nature, and we have to all scramble to work within as much as we understand about nature. So that's it. Goodbye and good luck? No, of course not. Now comes the reason for the Jewish people. Here comes Avraham. Avraham looks around at everybody furiously serving nature, desperation, hopelessness, all the evil and cruelty and pain that went with paganism. And he tried to restore insanity to the world, and he said, there's only one God. And God controls nature. And if you serve God, nature will be put back at your disposal. Now, how does that look? How does it look when nature is at your disposal? So what it looks like is what we naturally call open miracles. I come to the sea. I need to cross it because the evil, the wicked people are behind me, so it splits. That's nature at my disposal. I'm in a desert. I need food, so it falls from the sky. That's called nature at my service. They throw me into a burning fire, into Kivshana Asia, into a furnace. The fire doesn't burn me because it's at my service. Because it's moral, because it knows I'm a tzaddik. Right? That's called nature at my service. I'm 100 years old, so my body still has, becomes youthful and I can have a baby. What we call open miracles. That's simply nature serving the needs of man on a moment-by-moment basis. What Avram said is, if you serve Hashem, nature will be your servant. That's all. In other words, there'll be a relationship between man and nature, which is normal, and which was meant to be. And it all comes from just serving God. Forget about all the forces of nature. Leave them alone. So he started to bring the awareness of Hashem to the world. Serve Hashem, and everything will fall into place. And that's how the Baal HaKedah explains miracles. He says they're not miracles at all. Miracles mean that, Hashem broke into nature and changed the rules. No, that's the rules. That is the rules. The rules are that nature responds to your needs on a moment-by-moment basis. That's called nature. There's no such thing as a miracle, according to Baal HaKedah. It's just nature functioning correctly, because man deserves it. There's no such thing as a miracle. What we call a nace means that other people who don't understand call that a miracle. But we say, oh, Baruch, nature is back to normal. So the Jewish people come to the Yam and it splits. Big deal. That's what's supposed to happen. There's no vinegar to burn, so the oil to burn, so vinegar burns. Like, why not? So the Baal HaKedah develops this idea that what is normally called miracles are not miracles or whatever, they're semantics. It's nature functioning correctly as it was set up to function in Sheishas Yimei Bereishis as a Baal Bechira, serving man who deserves to be who is the master of nature, the ruler of nature. Nature is lower than man, at the service of man. Nature brings all good things to man. That's the normal state of affairs. That's what men were needed to be restored. And with the development of the Jewish people and our acceptance of Hashem, we brought back so-called open miracles to the world, which means we just brought nature back. We released nature from its curse. Hashem delinked nature from man in the time of Noah, and it took a long time. It took 400 years to Avram, then 400 years to Har Sinai to finally restore nature to its proper functioning. We finally were serving nature. We did a service for nature. We finally did what we had to do. And that's how it was meant to be. The problem is that when we start falling again, nature starts being delinked again. We have to maintain that level. Now, what happens on the Yam? So in Unkelis, one little word shows us how Chazal see this. Here, we say this in the Shira, in the Az Yashir. This is in Shemos, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Ches. Uberuach apecha nermu mayim. And through the wind of your nose, so to speak, what is nermu? Nermu mayim. The water stood up. Nitzvu kamod neid nozlem. It stood up like some running. These are hard words. What is nermu? So Unkele says, chakimu mayim. It acted with chachma. It was a Baal Bechira. Here's the Jews standing on the banks of the Yam Suf. So they're tzaddikim. They're worthy, at least in God's eyes, for this. Here are the Egyptians behind them. So it splits. Not only does it split, which is a moral chachma, Unkele says it acted with chachma, with arma, with trickery. It pulled in the Egyptians, enticed the Egyptians into the water so that it could collapse on them. In other words, nature at your service. Uncle says, Baruch HaPecha Nermu Mayim Chakimu Maya, the water acted with Chachma. Is that a miracle? No, that's how it should be. That's normal. That, according to Balakeda, is nature. Is Teva. That's the definition of nature. So, we're not used to that. And guess what? After the Jewish people saw nature restored to its perfect functioning, they sang Shira. Shira is a way of, a mode of expression when the whole world is in balance. When everything is existing exactly the way it was meant to exist in perfect harmony, the response is called Shira. That's why when Yeshua said to the sun, Dome, be silent, the sun said, My Shira. Yeshua said, my Shira will replace your Shira in this instance. The Shira of Klal Yisrael replaced the Shira of the water following its normal natural laws, which is not splitting, which is a testimony to God's creation. As we said, in general, miracles are not a good thing. But here and there, big miracles, a few miracles, they allow for Klal Yisrael's Shira to replace their Shira. But the rule at the same time is we don't ask for constant miracles, but because we realize that for everyone else who doesn't understand this system, they just see miracles as a proof there is no God. But for us who understand that a miracle is the restoration of nature to its proper functioning, and we sing Shira and we see the harmony with Tzadik Vatovlo, Rasha Varalo for a change, okay, that's harmony. So we see that. And for us, that allows us to sing Shira. But too many of these little incidents don't bring to Shira. They bring to the opposite. They bring to huge misunderstandings. So you see that even here, Chazal understand the nature. They understand that nature is meant to function with Chachma. Now, my grandfather points out in an unrelated pasuk that in the future, unlike today, nature will again be at our service. It's, for example, the Gemara says if a man is about to have relations with a woman who he doesn't know is a Nida, so the rock or the ground that they're on will say, stop. Nature will, for a righteous person, this is an example the Gemara gives, that the nature itself will speak for us, will help us, will guide us, will be at our service. So where are we today? So the question is, how does this work? Is this a situation that each person can develop individually? In other words, the more righteous a particular person is, the more nature is at their service. There is some degree of truth to that. We have a concept of hashgacha pratis, or siyata dishmaya. And greater people have a little more. What is tzaddik gozer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim? A tzaddik needs something, and Hashem does it for them. What is that? We have endless examples of that. People misfollow for something, and they get it. Nature manipulates things for that person. We have examples for that all the time. Many people can tell of little miracles in their own life, where nature just went out of whack and did something to benefit them, which is not statistically expected. Here's a story, personal story in my own family. And this is my cousin Dina Khan, who lives in South Africa, has a daughter, Chedva. And this is many years ago, like 20 years ago, and Dina was supposed to go to, she was supposed to come here for a bar mitzvah, and she was surprising everyone. She wasn't going to tell anybody that she was coming. She was going to take a flight out of South Africa with a stopover and come to New York. So 2 days before, she only told one person who was supposed to pick her up in New York. She was supposed to going to surprise her sister, Tovi Wilson, my cousin, and for her child's bar mitzvah. So the day before this flight, Chedva wakes up hysterical. You can't go, you're going to die, and you can't go. And she's completely out of her mind, is screaming all day long, crying in a frantic, you know, panic. You can't go. And Dina tried to calm her down. Bottom line is, by the next day, the daughter was hysterical, and she canceled her trip. Nobody knew she was coming except this one person. She canceled the trip because her daughter had a dream, or her daughter had a feeling, some premonition. So that plane blew up over Lockerbie. So the guy on the other end, who didn't know that she decided not to come, called South Africa, and she answered the phone, thank God, and whatever. Okay. But the point is, what is that? What is that premonition? What is that? So we all have stories of natural forces at our service here and there. What is that? Chosovos, merit. We do believe that to some degree, nature still will, for the greater the person, be in a small degree at working for them. No question. It seems we have experience with that. That is true. At the same time, no matter how great a person is nowadays, nature will not do an open miracle for a person. Nature will not do an open miracle. An open miracle means that everybody sees the laws of nature broken. It's not just a fluke. It's not some type of open miracle that demands, you know, almost no other explanation but God. It's God's major interference. Open miracles don't take place today for nobody. But individuals have some degree to more or less. That's why people run to tzaddikim. That's exactly why. And that's why tzaddikim, people, the more, you know, people's prayers have power, and that's why we said tzaddik gozer v'kadosh baruch hu mekayim. There is truth to that. At the same time, we're not able, we don't expect to restore the world in our day and age to a time of open miracles. That's for the future, when nature will be restored one more time to its proper functioning. And we're promised that somehow, some way, we're not quite sure how it will be and the nature of the future nisim. But Chazal assure us that the future nisim of the Geula will make the nisim of Mitzrayim pale in significance. Somehow all of nature will come so perfectly into the service of man, into the service of the righteous, of those that held on, those that persevered through all the generations, however it will be. Maybe man's nature, maybe physical, you know, the natural world will be again restored to its proper functioning. But I want to leave you with one thought. My father will also explain to me. How does a person in their day-to-day life, express the idea that we believe that nature is at our service? How do we live with that? It's not just a philosophy. We live and express through our behavior our fundamental understanding that nature is at the service of man and we are not at the service of nature. We don't serve nature. Nature isn't the overriding force and we're the poor victims. We don't say, what could we do? We fell in love with an Anju or something. As if there was a force greater than us and what could we do? We don't really think like that. So how do we express the fact that we dominate nature? Well, here it is. Every time a person is hungry and they don't eat because it's Yom Kippur, it's not kosher, they didn't make a bracha, it's basar v'chalav, whatever the reason is, I'm hungry, that's nature. And there's a juicy steak in front of me and it's delicious. And I say, I don't eat. And everybody around me says, why aren't you eating that? You say, because just because I'm hungry doesn't mean a thing to me. My convictions, my commitment to a higher law, a higher truth, says I don't respond to my impulse of my hunger impulse. Okay, more than that. I'm hot. I'm very hot. I don't take off my clothing. I'm angry. I don't kill. I don't take revenge. I don't destroy another person. I refuse to let my impulse dominate me. I govern my impulse. My impulse doesn't govern me. I dominate nature. Nature is at my service. I'm not serving nature. I'm attracted to somebody. You know, it's mating season, so to speak, like in the animal kingdom, and I don't mate. There's a natural force of attraction. Why they're married to some, if there's a woman, she's Eishes Ish, forbidden relationship, it's a Kohen and a Grusha, whatever the reason is. There's no Chuppah and Kedushin. It's one of the Arayas. It's a relative. So there's a natural force, and it doesn't control me. Well, every time we restrain ourselves from indulging our natural forces, we express this fundamental principle that nature is not our master, and nature is not delinked. We control nature and put it at our service and use it according to our needs, and it serves us so that we have a yetzer, a creative energy, force, impulse, and we direct them correctly, in the right place, the right time, under the right circumstances. We let nature express itself. That's what we do now. And the more a person does that, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts nature at their service in small ways. That's the more righteous a person is. So the more nature then, in small ways, comes to be their helper. But it's all in tiny little increments, and it's not in a major way today. So this is the story of man's relationship to nature. And so the Jewish people, to end, do we love miracles? We love miracles, but we understand their danger, no question about it. We don't ask for miracles because we know that nature itself speaks of God. And when there isn't a miracle, we understand that it's because we deserve that miracle. That's why you don't have the phenomenon, God, I never did anything good, you know, I never served you, but do me a miracle. Miracles don't come to people who have no emunah and don't serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, unless maybe there's some type of merit of the ancestors and they get, Hashem is giving them one opportunity or two opportunities by some crazy, situation comes their way to come back to their roots, to their senses, because maybe they have so many merits of the ancestors. But in general, nature serves the righteous. It's the tzaddikim. The more the righteous a person is, the more there could be some type of manipulation of nature. At the same time, very important, ein somchen al hanes. Nobody is supposed to walk around and say, well, I'm so righteous. Obviously, nature is at my service. I just, I'll go into a dangerous situation and a nace will happen. We don't talk like that. Or a person doesn't talk like this. Well, because I'm so great, that's why, that's why this happened to me, obviously, because I'm so righteous, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this for me. Nobody talks like that. In fact, what we do, this is very important, is we kind of straddle the fence. If something miraculous happens to us, we say, it's a free gift, I'm not on that madriga, I don't know why this HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped me like this. I don't, even Yaakov Avinu, when he had a fight Esav, he didn't think he had the merits to win, a seasoned warrior, and he was an inexperienced he wasn't a soldier, he was inexperienced. He didn't think he deserved a miracle. He said, I don't have enough merit. So no person should walk around thinking, oh yeah, So if something miraculous happens, you say, I don't deserve it, it's a free gift, I have gratitude to Hashem, how can I repay Hashem for this kindness? And then if a miracle doesn't happen for a person in a time of crisis, they say, I'm not Roy, I don't deserve it. Who do I think I am that nature should Hashem should take nature and manipulate it for me? I'm not some big tzaddik, so I don't expect Hashem to do these things for me. And that's it. So we straddle the fence. But we certainly don't walk around saying, oh yeah, I expect it, and be very careful. Be very careful with, sometimes flippantly, and it's a silly way to talk, people say, oh yeah, I was walking down the street and I was driving down the street and I found the parking space at the right time. Oh, it was Basher. And then I was doing this and this happens, Basher. And it's a good thing to see Hashem's hand in our lives. It's another thing to speak in a way that, oh yeah, things just fall into place for me. Because, I'm Rotway, I'm worthy. I mean, none of the greatest people never thought they were worthy. So we have, it's a delicate balance to keep the humility of not thinking, that we're at the madriga of that. At the same time, seeing a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hand and being grateful for every expression of that. Okay. Yeah. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Yes.